Welcome to the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, John Harris. We have a news roundup tonight. I haven't done a news roundup in a little bit, probably 2 weeks ago was the last time. So there's a lot of things that I had to decipher what I wanted to talk about, what I didn't. And I don't know if we'll get to all of it, but I am going to talk about immigration a little bit more. I have some SBC headlines to reveal to you. We are going to talk about the SBC presidential race now, who's going to be the next president for the largest Protestant denomination in the country. We're also going to talk a little bit about Epstein and Josh Harris. Josh Harris, for those who might not know, he used to be a very popular Christian figure. He wrote a book called I Kissed Dating Goodbye. He went through a series of changes, and I think it was 2018 when he deconstructed. He said, I'm not really a Christian anymore. Well, he's reversing course. I don't know if we want to call it that, but he's now warming up to the idea of Christianity again, but not the kind of Christianity that he was practicing before. We'll talk about that. Hillary Clinton wrote a piece, and in it, I never thought I would see this, but she mentioned Doug Wilson and Joe Rigney and Ali Beth Stuckey as problems in the MAGA coalition. So if we have time, we'll talk about it. I know others have, so that might be something for the bottom of the pile. But if we get there, we'll get there. And of course, we're live. So if you have questions, comments, cries of outrage, you can certainly leave those, as long as YouTube allows you to leave them, in the section for comments. And I will hopefully be able to get to them. This was unannounced, so I don't know how many people will join us. I haven't posted this on social media, and it's getting a little late, but I wanted to get it in. I wanted to talk to you tonight. I know some of you will be listening tomorrow on the rerun of the podcast, and we're going to get into some other Christian news as well. So it should be fun. Thanks for those who are streaming. Eileen, is it Eileen or Elaine? Is with us tonight. We have more coming in. I see the numbers going up. Stream froze with your tongue sticking out. Well, that's not good. Is it still frozen? I hope it's not. That's not good. You got me worried. I have to look up on my phone to see if the stream is actually coming through, because if it's not, then I'm going to have to pause it, I guess. Oh, I have an advertisement. That's great. I don't know how many. I always click the least amount of advertisements. It looks like I'm still streaming, so I'm going to go with it. So let me know if this keeps happening. I don't want to have problems. I have too many tabs open probably, and the computer's freaking out. I don't know if that's what it is, but I'll close a few of them. All right. Well, let's talk. Let's talk about the first story here. Stream is good, says Nicholas. Okay, good. I'm the only person I see in the chat. Well, that's not good. There's more in the chat. And you're all on YouTube, so I don't know what to say there. Okay, well, let's start here. We're going to start with Jeffrey Epstein, because everyone, well, I don't know if it's everyone, but a lot of people online are talking about Jeffrey Epstein, especially on X. And I'm going to be perfectly honest. I don't have a deep dive for you. I think a lot of other people have done more work than I have on this. They've actually done work on it. My familiarity with Jeffrey Epstein is basically a podcast I listened to a few years ago that was 5 or 6 hours long that led you to the conclusion that he was likely an asset of the Israeli government, but it was all circumstantial. There wasn't an actual silver bullet proving anything. And then headlines, I guess, I've seen. I've read a little bit of the emails and stuff, but it's because I've seen it on Twitter, or X, I guess they call it now. And I did do a search. I just was curious. I didn't even do it. I mean, now when you say I did a search, what does that even mean? I asked an AI bot to do a search. So I'm going to be honest with you. If I did the search, I did the search. This was an AI bot. I just said, hey, are there any evangelical names that pop up on this latest release? And apparently not. So there's one news story. And that's one of the things about this that I think is confusing for some people. It's just a dump of documents. And there's news stories, there's anonymous tips on Trump from 2020 that are being passed around as credible, but they're really not credible. That's one of the big things, I guess, that's taken out of this. Although I talked to someone earlier today who is a friend of mine and someone many of you would know. And he just said, look, I'm disturbed. I just feel kind of like I need to take a shower. I spent days just looking at these files and reading things and seeing what our elites are compromised with. And, you know, I suppose 2020, 2021, that's when a lot of people were surprised, who had not known before that point how compromised elite circles were. And a lot of stuff came out, not just Epstein. There was all kinds of things about celebrities. Now we have the Diddy stuff, of course. But who's that lady, that Russian lady? Abramovich, is that her name? I got to look this up. She does those dinners for celebrities. Make sure that I'm talking, that I'm using the right name. I don't know if I am. Let's see. Is it Abramovich? What would I Google? Abramovich celebrity dinners? Let's see. Spirit cooking. That's what they call it. Spirit cooking. Marina Abramovic. That's it. Abramovic. Okay. You remember that from a few years ago? And it's crazy because I just think there are a lot of evil people in the world, and there's so many pieces of evidence for it. Like if you're looking, you don't even have to be looking. You just keep your eyes open. You'll see it. Especially if you live in more urban areas or influential areas. And so I was going to share this. I think I've said this before in the podcast before I mention a few Epstein things here. My family, both sides, my grandparents, they lived in California. I was born in California. And one side, my mom's side, had some connections to Hollywood. And specifically my grandmother, who's not with us anymore, but she basically managed finances for, she had her own business, and it was a lot of celebrities were connected to her. And one of the things that I thought was interesting when all this stuff was being revealed a few years ago about Epstein and now further revelations that I think are mostly more of the same, I remember that my grandparents shielded my mom from Hollywood. There was opportunity for her to get involved. And the reason they shielded her was because they knew what Hollywood was like, and they knew it was corrupting. And anyone who knows anything about that industry, who lives in that area, whether they talk about it or not, they all know. It's just common knowledge that, yes, pedophilia is happening. Yes, there's pressure on actors and actresses and abuse that takes place. I mean, when the whole Me Too thing started, and it was mostly focused on Hollywood at first, I knew immediately that there was some legitimacy to probably some of the accusations. Now, the standards they were using and everything ended up, those weren't quite right. Just because someone makes an accusation, that doesn't mean that their accusation is necessarily true, or you have to believe it or prosecute it as someone who's working at the for the law. But it does mean that there was an actual problem. I think there was this window when at first people were trying to sort of like, let's correct the system. Let's get everyone to come out. And the system's still the system. The system is that people are evil. So things keep happening. When you're more powerful, you have more opportunities to cover up and bribe and manipulate and threaten. And so you get away with more evil. That's just the way the world works. Right? We see that in the Bible. That's the way that people are. People with authority who abuse authority will have a better chance sometimes of getting away with things. Anyway, it's common knowledge in California. So when things were coming out in the celebrity world, I just wasn't as, I mean, it was horrible, you know, and I think I've seen like all this stuff, like as far as like, oh, look at the Bohemian Grove and look at like, so many people send me so many documentaries. I think I've like filled my head with so much of this stuff, even if I'm just perusing it. And my conclusion is always the same. It's like, yeah, this isn't like a news flash. This is just how people in the upper echelons often behave. Yes, there's wicked things that happen. There's sick, twisted stuff that is hard for your normal, average, decent American who lives in the center of the country to quite understand. Why is there even an attraction to some of these evil practices? Like, are you trying to make yourself look like a Satan worshiper, or is that actually what you're doing? Like, why would you build a temple to Moloch on your island, right? These are all things. And so I'm saying all this to make a point that I want to make after I talk about some Epstein things here. And it's just leading up to like the way this whole thing is constructed, the way that the whole system works, if you will, or the way that, that's probably not the best way to put it, the way that people in relationship to each other operate without Christ, it goes to some very dark places. And we should probably expect that. We should obviously want to do everything we can with our power, and sometimes that's just a vote, to stop evil. But that's the nature of evil. And so I thought this was a really, really good thread or post on X. This was Matt Stoller. He said, the Jeffrey Epstein saga isn't a scandal about pedophilia. Now, you might say, whoa, John. You just said none of this really surprises you, even though it's horrible. Well, that's true. But I think there is something that's being missed in all this. And people want to jump into the details that are kind of juicy and just sick and personality driven. And there is like a bigger picture here. And so I want you to listen to this. He says, look, it's not about the pedophilia. It's a Russian word called blot, a Soviet era word meaning the use of personal networks for obtaining goods and services in short supply and for circumventing formal procedures. It's about a kind of government. This is what I mean by system. There's a kind of government, okay? And you might call it a shadow government. You might call it all kinds of things. There's all kinds of villain types to put into this, but I don't think there's like a one villain archetype to say, oh, it's that group or it's these people in this. It's actually like even broader than that. It doesn't have to be as pre-planned. So it's just when you have a lot of bureaucracy and red tape and money flowing around everywhere, and celebrities involved that are already compromised at lower stages, and you have a rotating door between all these elite sectors, you get this blot. As with the large number of blotniks in the Soviet era who made sure their factories got what they needed outside the formal state procurement process, Epstein greased the wheels for the neoliberal state. His job was governments. And you know me. I wrote Against the Waves. I really do critique the modern situation. If you want to call it globalist, call it globalist. I look at it as a liberal order, and I've referred to it that way. There's a liberal order. It's resting on certain assumptions, modern assumptions that we've come to in Western societies. And you get guys like Epstein kind of in the gear system because of it. The pedophilia and prostitution were part of it. That is obviously violating the rule of law, but so are the random favors Epstein bestowed. Like Epstein sending Senator Joe Manchin's request for a yacht, a request which came from the First Lady of the Virginia Islands to a random New York financier who might have one. Or working with Joy Ito, I guess that's at MIT, and billionaire Reid Hoffman to restructure the Bitcoin Foundation. It's all about matching capital and talent and inputs outside of the restrictions ordinary people are subject to. He's a networker. This kind of governance is particularly important in Soviet-style states where everyone knows the rules are fake, where skirting the system is the system. Epstein and his affiliates thrived because of the weakened institutions of the U.S., institutions enfeebled in many cases by the men in his network like Larry Summers. These men adopted multiple roles, advisor, businessman, academic, board member, regulator, and put on the hat that best maximized their self-interest and the self-interest of their narrow network at the moment. The old world, where handing someone your business card meant you represented that institution, disappeared in the 80s. Over the course of the 90s, neoconservatives, neoliberals, bankers, ultimately Epstein's network built his new social order, and it was one where you could succeed through the former rules, but if you were let into the networks of trust by blotniks, you could do anything you wanted. All right. And there's more, but I'll just leave it there. Matt references a few different things, and he just uses really one case as kind of the, like, here's just one example of what he was doing with the yacht and Joe Manchin and like people that never would have actually found each other because of Epstein. And it seems like everyone's theories about Epstein are basically they feel very legitimate. They feel like they've been like they believe something credible. Their theory is right. Here's the president of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, current president, going after the former president of Israel, Ehud Barak, because Barak was exposed in recordings with his pedophile friend, Netanyahu says, Jeffrey Epstein. Barak suggests carrying out selection among Jews and importing to Israel the right kind of Jews. And so this is a whole scandal because he basically wanted to make Israel more liberal by importing people from Russia. And bringing them in instead of more, I guess, religious and more conservative-minded Jewish people, which would be more the base for Netanyahu, I suppose. Here's the New York Post. Emails reveal new theory about whom Epstein was really working for. Oh, Vladimir Putin. Thousands of cryptic messages tying Jeffrey Epstein to Vladimir Putin have been discovered in the latest release. And there were people saying that years ago, that it was like, this is a Russian op. This whole thing. So he goes into detail on this, and you can paint a real picture here of Putin and Epstein if you really want to. And of course, and this probably goes without saying if you're on X, but all the Israel ties and all that, all those people are also very vindicated. Like everyone feels vindicated right now by this. And I think that actually says something to me. If everyone feels vindicated, if everyone can craft a narrative, if the president of Israel can craft the, like, and I'm not even saying he's crafting it, he's actually just taking what's there, and he can, and it's true, he can like use it to against his political opponents. If people who are against Russia can use it against Russia, people who are against Israel more broadly use it against Israel, if fill in the blank, then actually I think the description I just read for you is probably the most accurate. And Mike Benz, who I don't watch him because I don't have enough time to watch him, but every time I see shorts from him, he just seems like he's steeped in a lot of the sources. And he says basically the same thing. He says this, and here it is. I'm utterly blown away by this new audio in the Epstein files. It shows the secret conversation you fear every high-level government official might have with an outside fixer to hook them up the moment they leave government to enter the private sector. Here Epstein teaches, there it is, Barak, while he was still the Minister of Defense in Israel, but on, I thought Barak, wait, did I just say he was the former, wait, I thought he was the, yeah, he was a former Prime Minister. Okay, I was right about that. Right, I was going crazy here for a minute. Okay, this is while he was Minister of Defense. I got it. How to make millions of dollars in the private sector by first compiling a list of people who owe him favors from his 40 years in government service. Epstein then told Barak to pursue Peter Thiel, whose name at this point, Ehud Barak, did not even know how to spell, and to try to connect with Palantir, which apparently Epstein didn't know how to spell. And so he plays this clip, and there were all kinds of things, not just with Barak. I there was another one, and did I pull it? I guess I must have missed it somehow. I thought I had it. Okay, maybe I didn't. But there's all kinds of deals that are in these files of Epstein working with global leaders, I guess you could say, and networking them with each other and finding ways for them to cash in on favors that are owed to them and that kind of thing. So the question that's been asked for a long time is like, well, where did Epstein get his money? I don't understand. He's so rich and stuff. That seems like a pretty plausible answer to me. Like that was his job. And I know people on very small levels who are networkers. And this is a question, because I don't understand it. I'm not wired this way, but I will ask like, okay, so how are you paid? And they'll say like, oh, I'm paid for my relationships. I'm like, well, how does that work exactly? There's commissions, there's all kinds of perks and benefits and payoffs. And if you're selling intelligence too, you can be an independent. You can be, it's like the, it's not quite the same, but it's a little bit like the Buccaneers, right? Of the 16, 1700s who sometimes, you know, they become privateers and they work on behalf of a government in sort of a legitimate way. Like they're, if you're a privateer for England, you can go attack France when they're at war and take their stuff as your payment, right? But it's kind of like that. Like you can be independent and kind of a gun for hire. And the more people you know, the more credibility you have. And some guys, honestly, they're just really good at that. They know exactly what to say to gain trust. They can make people feel really good. They can get people results that they couldn't get for themselves. And that seems to be what Epstein was. And part of all of that, apparently, with that comes perversion, extreme perversion, abusive perversion. Not everyone probably was even aware who was talking to him about all the things that he was doing, but you would just, I think our human nature says some had to be, come on. Like how do you keep this in that he's got underage girls on an island and he's doing horrible things? I don't know how to answer that question. It's horrible. It's just, it's awful. It's awful that these conditions exist in the first place, but these are real conditions and they do exist. And I guarantee you right now, there are people who are not Jeffrey Epstein who are doing the same thing Jeffrey Epstein was doing. And they're doing it right now. And they're getting better probably at knowing how to cover their tracks and all of that as technology increases. But I think this is just the way things are because it's incentivized. Part of the liberal order is, I don't want to blame this all on the liberal order. I mean, elites have been bad before liberalism, and you can come up with many examples, but I think the global liberal order has a lot of high aspirations that they try to convince you that they stand for, high ideals. Equality is probably the chief one, sort of a nebulous freedom of some kind. And it looks different in different societies, but we're about democracy. We're about people expressing themselves with their choice and doing whatever they want to do, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone. And you can be anything you want to be, and it doesn't matter what your religion, race, or anything is. It's really your personal choice that makes you who you are. And I think that encourages this kind of thing more, that encourages people to pursue even their sinful, twisted desires without judgment from sort of like the people who are the heads of these at the top of these totem poles. I think that's part of it. I think when you have a lot of mass communication and travel and transit, there's a scale problem. Like some people have a bigger scale than others. They're just really able to. If you have like a jet, right, that's a game changer. You can go places at ease. If you can remember a lot of names and remember conversations and know how to use those things and other people don't, and we live in a big world where there's all kinds of different countries with different possibilities and strengths and weaknesses, and you're able to navigate that well, you can help other people navigate that to their own benefit. It's like in investing, like there's just the sky's the limit because there's so many things to invest in and it's like overwhelming at first. But if you have a handle on that, if you know investment really well, you end up getting a lot of people rich. So this is more than just investment, right? And you have the added benefit here, I suppose, of when you do a blackmail on people, then you are able to control them better and get them to do things they might not otherwise have done because you have dirt on them. So that's part of it too. But yeah, I think living in the modern world, in the liberal order, where self is the highest good and choice and kind of like asserting yourself and looking at man as if man is God, then yeah. Yeah. What could go wrong? What could go wrong? Right. So I don't want to just like outsource everything. Epstein was an actual evil man. But that's sort of a framing issue. And without getting into salacious details, which I don't have a full grasp of, I will admit. All right. So that's really, I felt in this the need to talk about it just because it's being talked about. And people, I think, want to know my take a little bit on this. And I don't know, I like to frame things. And that's the way I would frame and just sort of digest the phenomena of Jeffrey Epstein. Okay, we're going to take a few questions and I'll go to some general things. We'll talk about the omnibus bill and some other things, and then we'll get to the SBC. Richard says they are trying to act like Satan worshipers because they are, and not beating around the bush anymore. These people are powered by the enemy himself. When you are not a Christian, you would do anything you can to get power and money. Stormy Squad says, I thought all this Epstein stuff was a matter of record. We've known all this for like 10 years. Well, there was more documents released. So people are sifting through those. There's different stages of the release. And I think someone told me 20%. I don't know if that's true, but we're somewhere, I think, towards the beginning. Epstein brought me to Christ in 2019 when I learned about all the connections. It became very clear evil was real. You know, that's such a good point, Baker. I think there's a lot of people in your situation. They didn't even know if they really believed in God. They were kind of muddling through life, perhaps, or just sort of have vague notions of this. And then they realized, because they saw it face to face, that there was real evil out there. And when you start believing there's real evil, then you start believing there must be good. And if there must be good, there must be God. Silver linings, right? Okay. Michael asked who gave Epstein his money. I don't know if you were here on the stream earlier, Michael, but so I'm not going to repeat myself. You can go back. I think a lot of people gave Epstein money for favors, basically. It's kind of like a commission. I compared it to being a privateer. Okay. Well, I'm sure there were governments who probably paid him for intelligence and all that too. Let's talk about the next thing, Thomas Massie. And so I arranged this in order because, speaking of the rules and the regulations and having to go outside of them and around them, and Epstein being the guy that can do that, Thomas Massie revealed a lot of details about this new spending bill. And it's like everything that you're used to hearing, right? $5 billion to provide cash benefits, healthcare, daycare, and job programs to refugees on the taxpayer's dime. Wow. $350 million to fund the CIA's branch of the State Department. You got Israel, $300 million. What I understand about this, because I know Epstein recently said we don't need the United States money anymore. So I don't know how long it takes to stop this stuff. I think it's like a decade or so of like a phasing out. But that's a lot of money, guys. That's a lot of money. And most of that money, like 75% or so of that money, is literally, it has strings attached that Israel has to pay defense contractors in our country with it. So it's basically corporate welfare. And it's not just Israel. It's all kinds of other countries. You have Egypt, same thing. They get $1.5 billion. You got Jordan, the Jordanians, $2.1 billion, $700 million for HIV/AIDS. He just goes in like all this pork. And I don't want to just like discourage everyone, but this is the way it's been for just so long. And it took time to get here, but the pork barrel spending is out of control. Now, what did the Republicans get for this? Trump got some immigration concessions, and they actually cut, believe it or not, the budget went down. I don't know, it was like 11% or something. The budget goes. So they actually, like, this isn't as bad as it was. So I'm just like, you know, it's so bad. And I think there's a mentality out there. There's a lot of people who are like, I want change now. Stop it all right now. And it's like, I'm there too. I'm with you. Like this has been conservative talk show hosts since I can remember. They get furious when they see this stuff. But it's like, it doesn't matter who you elect, it keeps happening. And people are addicted to it. It's hard to get off of it. If anything, you have to do it gradually, I suppose, because that's all you seem to be able to do. You're working with all these different people who want the pork for their hometown so they can get reelected. I don't know what to tell you guys. Like, it's one thing to take a principled stand like Thomas Massie, which I do respect it. But at the same time, I also know, like, we have to prioritize things. And it's like, okay, so what's the priority? Do we Do we keep focusing on immigration? Do we fund the Department of Homeland Security and ICE? These are the trade-offs, guys. And I think we have to be just realistic about all of this and know where we stand in our priority. This is just the way Washington works. And that's why when you have multiple governments working that way, you end up with someone who can speak the language that communicates between them. And to some extent, that was the Jeffrey Epstein thing. All right, some quick stuff here. We got the Daily Signal headline. One sentence reveals the incongruity of the less victimhood worldview. And Billie Eilish at the Grammys said, no one is illegal on stolen land. And everyone clapped for her. And it was just another reminder that, yep, the elites are completely given over to leftism. And it's ironic. Ironic's not even the word. It's just hypocritical, I guess. And it makes no sense. No one is illegal on stolen land. Okay, so like the people who came on that land were also not illegal then, right? So like the U.S. Cavalry going into the Wounded Knee Massacre, they weren't illegal because like they were also on stolen land, right? Like I guess no one's ever illegal, ever. ICE isn't illegal. It's like it's self-refutation is what it is. But that got a standing ovation at the Grammys. Mr. John Piper, all right, I know we're jumping around here. John Piper, you shall not spread a false report, Exodus 23:1. Progressive false or conservative false? It's like a fortune cookie. I guess it's just your daily reminder that John Piper probably should retire. But it's sad to me because it's like he's done this for so long. He does this like sort of vague third wayism. I just wrote progressive false. You're welcome. I mean, like, what would you apply this to anything else? I don't know. Like, I mean, yeah, if it's false, it's false. Got it. You know, but I'm trying to think of an example that would be outside the political realm. I don't know, like PCA false, PCUSA false. It's like, okay, I guess they can both lie. Like, sure. ICE builds warehouses for mass detention network, rattling locals. This is a headline, and I only brought it up to just say one thing. I think this is an important thing to say. ICE lacks the facilities to be able to do what they're doing. And so I think it's important to just sort of realize that. I'm sorry, I'm getting a text right now. Okay, it's not. I thought it was a news item. All right. It's important to realize that there are limitations to what ICE can do. And one of the things is the infrastructure doesn't even exist to handle all the people that they have to process. So they're on it. They're making progress. They're trying. Faith-based organizations can now get funding for addiction recovery programs. The home HHS announces. So that's RFK, Health and Human Services. Just want to let you know that because that's another thing. I think another one of the many things that if we're going to spend the money, I don't really want to. It's probably in that pork. But if we're going to do it, then I guess I'd prefer that faith-based organizations can also get funding for addiction recovery. All right. I might save this. I have a crossroads in front of me. All right. I'll talk about it briefly. This is the Atlantic piece. Hillary Clinton wrote this, and it is called MAGA's War on Empathy. It starts when I first saw the video of killing of Alex Priddy, an ICU nurse at the Minneapolis VA hospital. I immediately thought of the parable of the Good Samaritan. Well, that's an interesting opener. And she gets into this. It's just Jesus tells us to love our neighbors as ourselves. And that's not what Donald Trump's America is about. And she goes in on Doug Wilson and Allie Beth Stuckey and Joe Rigney because they talk about the sin of empathy. And she says, that's what we need more of is empathy. And this whole thing is laced with your kind of typical Northeastern mainline sort of understanding of what the Bible really means. This, like, the whole thing's this deeper moral lesson about being kind to others, and that kindness should manifest itself in not just rhetoric, but also policy. And so ICE is mean. Trump is mean. It's harshness and meanness. And she also brings up social media is mean. Elon Musk is mean. They're letting people say horrible things. People are being demonized. And after I read the article, this is my conclusion to the whole thing, basically. And I'll just read you her line. She says, when I see brutality like we've all witnessed in Minnesota, I ask myself, can I really find empathy for people who insist on dehumanizing others? And I'm not sure, to be honest. I'm working on it. I believe our hearts are big enough to hold these truths at once. We can see the humanity and even the worst of our fellow human beings and still fiercely resist tyranny and repression. We can stand firm without mirroring the cruelty of our opponents. These are dark days in America. Here's the thing. She talks about, you know, how she called the Trump supporters deplorables and stuff. She actually reckons with all that. There is this sort of, and you hear it, there's this glimmer of truth, this like this little kernel that's it's so little, but there is this kernel of truth to, yes, we actually are supposed to treat people according to the way Jesus said to treat them on the Sermon on the Mount, but that was not a policy procedure about government responsibility. And I know I made this case, I don't know how many times, but it's like the ICE stuff. I saw comments on my Facebook where I'm like, it's illegal. Like, these people are in this country illegally. ICE is going after those who are not just here illegally, but have done criminal actions. They have to go. And I understand it's cruel, it's mean, all of this. And I still have people quoting Sermon on the Mount stuff to me. I'm like, that's not the application of this. I think the heart of a Christian statesman is a love for all of God's creation because they love God. And that includes all people. That includes a hope that even the vilest offender would repent. It's loving your enemies. It's all of that. Hillary Clinton's actually like, she's half right about the fact that, yeah, you can sort of hold two things together. One is you look at God's creation and there is a love. God takes no pleasure in sending people to hell. Like, you can say all this and at the same time have a righteous indignation towards those who hate God, you know, stick their finger in the face of God and attack his church and do wicked, evil things. People like Jeffrey Epstein. Hey folks, John here. I'm 36 years old. And let me tell you, a few years ago, I noticed that the same workouts and same diet weren't enough to help me maintain my same level of endurance. And nobody warns you about this, but most guys start losing testosterone around 30, about 1% a year after that. I didn't want to rely on caffeine for energy anymore. I wanted to feel like myself again, naturally. So for the first time, I'm trying Mars Men Testosterone Supplement. Here's the deal. Your body makes testosterone. SHBG handcuffs a lot of it. Mars Men helps free that locked testosterone so you can actually use it. No synthetics, no needles, just 8 natural clinically dosed ingredients like Tongkat Ali, Shilajit, vitamin D, zinc, boron, and more. Made in the USA, third-party tested, I'm going to see if this gets me faster recovery in the gym, plus more consistent natural energy throughout the day. For a limited time, our listeners get 50% off for life plus free shipping and 3 free gifts at mengotomars.com. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off and 3 free gifts at checkout. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them our show sent you. Conversations that matter. You can look at that and you can have a righteous indignation towards that. And you can also want policies that prosecute that. And Hillary Clinton obviously is a total hypocrite, total, like, just, I mean, she's someone that I think is terrible as far as her, the way she's conducted her life and her policies. They're not compassionate. They're cruel. I mean, killing babies. But here's the thing, that message, and this is what I felt when I read it. I was like, you know, that actually does resonate with some people. That, like, aren't you stressed out by what you see on TV? Don't you just want to get back to, like, and she even, like, uses Reagan. She's like, don't you remember Reagan? He was so nice. And look at Trump eating this. I actually think there's something to this. Like, I've seen even some right-leaning influencers in the last few days turning on Trump. And they're, like, saying things like, well, I didn't want to go that far. Like, I was down with, you know, we got to close the border, but I wasn't thinking we're going to go round up people with ICE. What's the answer to all this? Well, we don't have a country if we don't enforce our border. We have to actually keep doing what we're doing. At the same time, I don't think we should make it easy for them. Like, I think we should be able to, as Christian men and women, in our public what we say publicly, I think we should have a measure of restraint. We should know when it's time. And this takes some discernment to call a spade and to be aggressive. And there's also a time to support the right public policy, to apply the right teaching from God's law, to lay the hammer down, and to also say, kind of like I said with Elijah Schaefer the other day, I'm praying for Elijah Schaefer's family. Right? I just thought of him because things have been revealed online that Elijah Schaefer apparently, I mean, we all knew this last year when I talked about Elijah Schaefer and whatever it was. It was like a few months ago. It was like October or something. I was like, this guy's a moral horror show. Like he is, what he just freely comes out of his mouth reveals who this guy actually is. Well, now it's all revealed. And it's a mess. And I don't even know how to make heads or tails of all of it, but certainly sexual perversion and just a terrible marriage. It looks like drugs are probably involved. And like, what do you do? I mean, this guy is someone that I critiqued, and he was someone who, you know, online was like very aggressive against, I guess, me and Tom Buck. But you pray for him, right? Like you pray, like, okay, he's an evil person. What do you, like, I want the law to come down on evil people, but I also want them to repent and know Christ. I know Paul was killing Christians and Christ got a hold of him. Christ got a hold of me. Christ can get a hold of you, right? He can show you your sin and then show you what he did to pay for that sin so that you could be in a right relationship with God. He can change your heart. I think that's what Christians should do. And I don't think Hillary Clinton believes that part of it. I think she just has like a vague sort of moral heavenly good feelings that Christians should have. It's like the afterglow of what Christianity looks like when it's dying. And she wants to sort of hearken people back to that. And I think that's also what we're going to talk to Josh Harris in a minute. I think that's what Josh Harris is also attracted to. Like there's these sort of downstream blessings from Christianity. Like you actually genuinely become a better person and love people. And like you want to have that. But how can you have that and hold on to sin simultaneously? You can't. And I think that's what sort of the soft mainline kind of liberals, that's what they try to do. They want to have both of these things together somehow, and they can't have both of those things. Just doesn't work. Josh Harris, everyone. Josh Harris, author of I Kiss Dating Goodbye. I'm not related to him, but he posted this Keith Green album cover of, I guess that must be, everyone's bowing down. So I'm guessing this is the story of, but there's only one person. It's not like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Maybe that's Jesus. I don't know. Saying, I'm not going to bow. And someone's yelling at him. And Josh Harris writes, I don't know how to say this, and it probably won't make sense, but it feels like President Trump is leading me back to Jesus. 8 years ago, when Donald Trump was first elected president, I gave him partial credit for unraveling my faith. Watching the evangelical world embrace him was a moment of significant disillusionment for me. I felt like seeing behind the curtain, like realizing what had been driving so much of the church all along, and it felt compromised. And in the years that followed, I went through a season of overcorrection. So now he's saying he overcorrected. And he lived in a reaction. If Trump supporters were for something, I was automatically against it. I didn't want to be like them. But then Richard Rohr, so he's got this sort of new age guru telling him, giving him instruction, I guess, or he's reading him. When you organize your life around something, opposing something, you become well-disguised mirror image of it. Okay, so he's saying, like, I can't be hateful, and I can't be condescending. At the same time, he says, I started noticing the same bully energy in progressive spaces. So he say, hey, these leftists aren't as friendly as I thought they were. They just have a different orthodoxy. No kidding, Josh Harris. No kidding. Like, how did you not know that? I don't know. I think Josh Harris must have lived like a really sheltered life in evangelical bubbles. And now he's in the real world and he's like, oh my goodness, it's not like it was. I see this all the time, by the way. I see people leave the church. You're like, it's so cruel. And like all they ever knew is the church. They were in Christian school or homeschool. They went to church. They were in the Bible Belt or something. And then they like just go crazy. They leave it all, develop a completely new social network. And they're like, that guy in the corner, is that Jeffrey Epstein? Like, I exaggerate a little, but they they realize, wow, okay, so people are evil everywhere. It's not just in my church. Yeah, that's like what the Bible says. So I felt the same fear I had felt in the church, the same anxiety. So he's going through all the same things. And he was felt like he was being pushed out and labeled. So he was rejected by the left. Fast forward now, Trump has been back in office, and now he's terrible, blatant, ruthless power. Look at what ICE is doing. And, you know, he talks about how his family had internment camps for the Japanese. By the way, my dad knew some of the children in California from those. And yeah, like, I don't know, maybe this isn't for this podcast, but yeah, it was kind of that whole episode. Like, I understand why it happened. At the same time, it's like kind of, it's like, how did that happen? It seems kind of messed up. But as I sit with all of this, afraid and unsettled, I find myself drawn back to the stories that shape me, the stories of the Bible. So he's saying, like, my family history, internment camps, and Trump, and he's doing evil things. And so I went back to the Bible, and Daniel and Elijah and all these people, Jesus, and he's getting to know Jesus. So he's turning back to what he's familiar with. And he says, like, this is interesting. He's like, Jesus is still standing, and that, like, Jesus is better than Trump, basically, is his point. So I was like, well, that's interesting. So I started going back just to see, like, well, what else is he saying? And so he has this interview with a guy who's saying, like, hell isn't forever. It's basically the Kirk Cameron position. It's annihilationism. And I was like, interesting. He's got profanity and stuff. But, like, it's this weird combination, escaping cult thinking. Like, I see this a lot with people who go ex-evangelical. They think they were part of a cult, so they, like, become very interested in cults. Sorry about this, guys. I don't mean to put profanity on the screen. I'm not even going to read that one. I'm sorry about that. Immature aspects of my deconstruction. Now he's critiquing himself and his own deconstruction. And the funny thing is, every single photo is a picture of him in some melodramatic kind of pose. So, I think he's still focused on himself, guys. He's still navel gazing quite a bit. He's trying to figure out life now for the first time. And it's still kind of all about him. How my husband helped me heal from purity culture. Let's see, an apology, why I didn't publish my book. Now we're going back to 2024, but my Christian phases so far: evangelical, charismatic, reformed, charismatic, complementarian, skeptical, nuanced, evangelical, egalitarian, ex-evangelical, LGBT affirming Christian, deconstructed, angry ex-Christian, melancholy, unsure seeker, happy, unsure seeker, still prays to Jesus and visits church less, triggered, more understanding towards religion because no one has figured this human being. And then ? Dude has no anchor. He's literally just going through life trying to figure it out, but in the process trying to, like, preach to all of us too. And I guess tell us what he's learned, but he's sort of passing himself off as an authority on some of these things. It's just, I don't know, the whole thing's sad to me. But he wants to do the whole, like, I'm not about religion, I'm about Jesus thing. Like, Jesus is good because Sermon on the Mount guy, right? And they only go to the Sermon on the Mount sections they like. It's like, they don't talk about what he says about divorce, right? Like Josh Harris's divorce. They don't talk about what he says about, like, I never knew you, you workers of iniquity. Like, they tend to go to the things that give them the gentle Jesus. Okay. So Josh, what's the conclusion on that? I guess just that it's sad. Pray for Josh Harris. I see this pattern though, and I think the reason for it is kind of like what Hillary Clinton was writing. The world is cruel. You reject your, like, whatever anchor point you did have in the faith, in Christianity, you reject it and then you're left without it. And so it's like you went to the dump and you just threw out everything and you realized, oh wait, there are a whole bunch of things that I shouldn't have thrown out. And so now you're back in the dump and you're taking things out and you're like, okay, this one, I'm going to keep this Jesus. Okay. I'm going to keep Jesus over here, but it's like the nice Jesus that I want. And okay, Old Testament, let's throw that back in, you know, actually, I guess not for some of the stories. He likes some of the stories, but you start picking and choosing and trying to craft something that suits you by giving you the comfort that you used to have without the moral law, usually, that you couldn't live up to, that condemned you. That's generally what I see. And I see this over and over with ex-evangelicals. And I think we're accustomed to thinking like, okay, the off-ramp from the church is like this secular atheistic stuff. I mean, in my experience, it doesn't last for long. It depends, but a lot of people end up trying to come to some other religious outlook of some kind. They don't just stay in neutral sphere where they're religionless. That's very rare. Okay. Chronicles Magazine, The Middle Path. This is an article being passed around a lot. I'm not going to do it justice if I summarize it probably, but I only have time to summarize it. So I'll just say this. He basically talked, Paul Gottfried, who I think he's still the editor-in-chief of Chronicles Magazine and paleoconservative thinker. He basically says, look, we're kind of between a rock and a hard place. Like, do you want these neoconservatives or do you want Nick Fuentes? And like, neither of them are exactly where we're at. And so it's called The Middle Path, which it sounds a lot like the third way, doesn't it? But I think he makes a lot of good points in this that look, you know, like what's the real threat, like overall politically? He identifies some of the things with a guy like Fuentes that I pointed out, like this guy, like what he's saying is not always accurate. It's not impressive. It's volatile. It shifts. He doesn't have virtue. Virtue is so important. Like he points out some of these things, but he's also just like, okay, so, but who has power right now and who has had power for a long time? And we don't have to choose between these two, basically. Like we don't have to like get into, let's just get into condemning anti-Semitism from the frame of the liberals. And anyway, I have to chew on it a little bit more, but I think like he's saying some things I'm not seeing said in these circles. And I give him some credit for that because there's really hard lines being formed now. And Paul Gottfried's like, you know what? I'm just going to take the middle path here. And like, I'm just going to go with what I've always believed basically. And like where I've always been standing. And I feel very much that way too. Like I'm just like, I haven't changed any core belief on anything. And since I've had a public profile, I can't think of one thing I've developed in certain areas, I suppose, but I never, like, it was always a development where I already had that belief. And I feel like there's very rigid purity spirals now that are like making you choose to be fully committed to one thing or the other. And there are things that aren't even, that probably shouldn't even be the main priority. So I'm glad to see that Paul Gottfried feels very similar, I guess. I'm going to talk about this later this week. Virginia Democrats are not playing beanbag. It isn't incredible to watch Abigail Spanberger, the governor of Virginia, and what she is doing to that state. It is a lesson in how Democrats, when they get in charge, they close the door behind them. And like I saw this in California, it's happening in Virginia. We'll talk about that more in detail later in the week. Anyway, a good article from Christian Post on women declining birth rates and abortion, what is really going on. And it's just basically a clarion call to we have like a fundamental problem with women wanting to evade motherhood, and we have a fertility crisis. We don't really have the luxury of doing that. I can only summarize right now, so probably shouldn't have even mentioned it. I have to get to the Southern Baptist stuff, guys. I'm racing to the finish line here. Resurfaced 3,300-year-old Egyptian document hints at biblical giants being real. No way. Men of renown that caused widespread chaos, which prompted God to cleanse the earth by destroying all the creatures. So there's an Egyptian papyrus dated to the 13th century BC, and it mentions run-ins with the Shoshu people, who are supposedly 8 foot tall, which scared Israelites. Well, wouldn't you know it? All these archaeological findings confirm the Bible every single time. All right, Southern Baptist Convention, and then we'll do some questions. Senator James Lankford voted with all the Democrats in the Senate to continue funding welfare programs for non-citizens. James Lankford has probably given the ERLC of the Southern Baptist Convention more access than any other senator. He is a Southern Baptist himself, and he needs to be primaried. He really does. He comes from the deepest red state, probably, Oklahoma. Dusty Devers, please primary James Lankford. Someone primary him. It's so maddening. Like you understand, or you sort of like empathize. That's not the word. I was using the word earlier, so it was in my mind. I guess understand. You understand why someone who's in New York, who might be in a red district, has to kind of play ball. Even then, I don't. But it's more understandable. Oklahoma, like this is such a problem. All right, let's talk about some more directly related SBC stuff. Anna Staver, it's a packed house at St. John Missionary Baptist Church in Springfield, Ohio this morning. They're holding a service ahead of the potential end of temporary protected status for thousands of Haitians who live here. Which is it, like, this is politics in the church. Is this Christian nationalism, right? This is politics of the church, but on the left. Now, St. John's Missionary Baptist is not an SBC church, but guess who spoke there? The SBC ethnic leader advocates in Ohio for extended TPS for Haitian immigrants. This is on Kentucky Today. Kenny Felix, president of the Southern Baptist Convention National Haitian Fellowship, joined faith leaders from across the U.S. in Springfield February 2nd, advocating for continued TPS for Haitians and humane treatment for all immigrants here. Now, let me explain something to all of y'all about this. Remember that whole issue in the presidential election with in Ohio, look at these Haitians, look at what they're doing. Remember Trump, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, that whole thing that was memed. All right. So they're let's see, representing about 500 Southern Baptist Haitian congregations and collaborating with Haitian pastors, Felix joins about 700 faith and civic leaders advocating for 350,000 Haitians and others who hold TPS here. 350,000, including just 15,000 in Springfield alone. Now let's talk about this. Why do governments want this? Because these are extra bodies that have money. Where do they get the money? The state is paying for a lot of this. NGOs are paying for a lot of this. And it is, I guess in theory, boosts your economy a little bit, but it's a fake boost, right? This is money that's taken from you. So here's the deal. Those Haitians that came here, we had an earthquake. They given temporary protected status. It's supposed to be temporary. It means they go home. I'm trying to think with Haiti. I think it was the earthquake and all. And then it was like the fact that their country is terrible. Like it's just, a guy named Barbecue who was running the place. But I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken now, I think it was a hurricane that gave them that. So temporary protected status. It's temporary. And this is the thing that I was trying to explain last week. This is one example of it where I'm like, look at all these NGOs that Southern Baptists are supporting. And they say like, and sometimes all they see is the sort of quote unquote charitable end of it. They're feeding people. And you form relationships in doing that. I understand that. It's not bad to do that. But this is with an organization that is providing legal services and advocacy. That's political. And they're doing it with money that they take from you in taxes. That's part of what they're doing. And I said, they're advocating for illegal migrants. And people were pushing back on me and saying, John, that's not true. These people came in legally. That is a turn of phrase. The temporary protected status people, okay, they came in legally. People who came in and got a court date for asylum seeking and then just bounced. You could say they came in legally. We knew they were here. We gave them a court date and they didn't show up. So they came in legally and Biden was sloppy on all of this. What happens when the TPS runs out? What happens when, when they bounced from their court date? They're now illegal. That's just how it works. And these organizations are screaming about it. You could say it's maybe money. Give them the best motivations you want to give them. They're very upset about it because that's their job. And you're taking away the people that, you know, that they're supposed to be servicing. They did to justify their existence somehow. And now you're taking away the reason for their existence in the first place. They are using resources oftentimes that some of which come from your tax dollars to now become advocacy arms, to do political stuff on behalf of people who are what? About to be or are already here illegally. And how would you feel? Like, put it this way. Like, how would you feel if someone was like, we're just advocating for Mexicans in Mexico, let's say. Like, we want them to be American citizens. And so we're a refugee resettlement group and we're just advocating that they be considered refugees. You would be like, well, that's not what are you talking about? Why? That's not part of what I signed up for. That's not, how is that like Good Samaritan stuff? Like that's more just like, you're just a political advocate arm, like go do that somewhere else. Like stop with the, but that's the thing that it's like that, but they're also doing these charitable efforts. They're connecting people to resources. Now NGOs cannot, and the people they contract with, they're not sharing the gospel. They can't proselytize. So that's another compromising feature of this. But I just wanted to show you this is what's going on. And in the article, I think it even mentions the NGOs that were part of this. Let's see if I can find it. Maybe it wasn't this article. I know there was one that was mentioning it. I thought it was something like Faith Coalition, something like that, that was involved in this. Oh, love. Okay. St. John's Missionary Baptist Church and the Multidimensional Faith in Action. That's it. Organizing Undivided and G92 Love Thy Neighbor. So I haven't looked in those groups, but I'm willing to bet that they're connected to another NGO that's getting government money, probably government money that's going to come through this new bill. J.D. Greer, a great leader for an important moment. I'm excited and honored to nominate one of my best friends, Joshua Powell, says Jay Hardwick, and J.D. Greer retweets it. J.D. Greer, former president of the Southern Baptist Convention, known to be a little more progressive, a little, maybe a lot more progressive for SBC presidents. Maybe not in recent times. Like a lot of them have been that way, but Greer was kind of like your first progressive SBC president, and he likes Joshua Powell. So I just did a very cursory search on Josh Powell. It's like, okay, where is he at? And on the racial reconciliation stuff, here he is from 2000. Oh, sorry. Do I want to start there? Yeah, I'll start here, I guess. 2020? Yeah, 2020. Oh, that's not ancient history, is it? I thought there was one from 2016. This is 2020, apparently. All right. So here, Josh Powell is the president of the South Carolina Baptist Convention, senior pastor of Lake Murray Baptist Church in Lexington, South Carolina. And among other things, here is a resolution, a personal resolution, which I pray can be adapted to, I think this is South Carolina. Let me read for you to a part of it. To denounce racism and white supremacy, not just in the most glaring instances, but also in its subtle forms, which are more rampant and pervasive than we often realize. So like microaggressions, I guess. To plead with my white brothers and sisters to speak out and act out, emphasizing when we see someone hurting, no matter what they look like. Okay, so I guess white brothers, that's it. Like not black brothers, not Asian brothers, like the white brothers need to go speak out because they're the oppressor, I guess. To follow the example of the Good Samaritan helping to bandage wounds and care for the hurting. To use our voices to proclaim the beauty of God's multicolored creation and equality of every man and woman before the Lord. Like, what? This is so nebulous. Like, equality in what sense? What are we talking about here? Equality in like intrinsic worth? Sure. But are we talking about other things too? What does this mean? To be courageous. Like, and to give you an example, like are the Haitians here? Like, that's I'm sure the narrative about the Haitians in Ohio. Like, it's an equality thing. Like, these people, they've been here. They deserve to be here. They're like, they're equal with us. Like, okay, self-worth before God, they have souls, but that doesn't mean they have access to all the benefits that people that have been here for a long time have fought and died and sacrificed for. Anyway, to use our voice to proclaim the beauty of God's multicolor. Oh, I already read that. To be courageous, I have often been hesitant to make a stand because of what it would mean for my position and influence. I repent of this and endeavor to be faithful. To stand with millions of our African-American brothers and sisters who have too often stood alone. Personally, I will use any platform the Lord gives me to proclaim the gospel boldly and courageously and stand on the side of justice. So I guess the African-Americans have been standing alone on the gospel and justice. And like, it begs the question, right? This is 2020. All right. So remember the year that that particular thing was written. And then I guess it was adopted by the South Carolina Baptist. And there's a picture right there. And so that's all I really wanted to share, I think, with that. He also was for the changing Southern Baptist name to Great Commission Baptist. And he said that it plays into, he says, the farther we get from 1845, that's the formation of the convention, the more we need to be clear about our mission. And yes, it plays into it with the issue of race, but that's not the only thing. All right. So race. He said, like, we got to change the name because Southern is just, you know, it's racist to be Southern. Style Weekly's post online. Thousands of people turned on a bitterly cold night at Kingsland Baptist Church in Chesterfield County. So they came out to see and hear the Buddhist monks on the 99th day of their walk for peace. That's so great. They came from some Buddhist center and this Buddhist temple in Texas. They gave speeches. Oh, so please be mindful of each and every step. After speaking, the monks handed out peace bracelets. Oh, this is so nice. Where did this happen exactly? Oh, it happened at Kingsland Baptist Church in Chesterfield County. I wonder. Interesting. They are part of the SBC Virginia. They are also listed on the Southern Baptist Convention's website. So now we got a SBC church hosting Buddhists. I don't know, could the credentials committee do anything about this? I mean, it's not like the fault of the whole SBC, but it's like, how does this happen? So I'm letting them know now. I'm letting people out there know who can tell people. Apparently that's going on. Yeah. And so the Center for Baptist Leadership put out an article about the slow death of the cooperative program that has begun by Rhett Burns. Rhett Burns has been great over the years trying to get forensic audits and accountability for the Southern Baptist Convention and the entities. And the latest cooperative program giving report reveals how Southern Baptist churches are responding to the platform, that the platforms like the elites. Giving to the cooperative program in July is down 6% below budget. All right. So on the other hand, designated giving for the month increased from July of last year, but overall 2.5% below 2024's designated giving. In other words, people, there is less giving to the Southern Baptist Convention. I'm actually a little sad. I wasn't surprised to be sad about this. Like, I think there have been times I've been like, yeah, like it needs to go and stuff, but I know what that means. That's the problem. I know what that means. I know that whatever influence it had, the bellwether it was, it's fading and it's a death. It's a slow death, but it's been quicker the last few years. And this country desperately needs a moral center, a moral conscience, people who remember who they are as Christians and are able to call people back to God. That's needed along with leaders who are willing to make hard choices and use force to promote truth. When it's appropriate, that we need both of those things at the same time. And not having the Southern Baptist Convention anymore and seeing how corrupted it is. So this is sort of like, I'm putting a stake in the ground. Like, this is the year. If you're still in the SBC, like, this is the year, guys, get out there and make a difference. And if it doesn't work out in the years to come, okay. But like, you gave it your shot. All right. I'm going to talk more about SBC stuff in the coming weeks, but I wanted to just talk about all of this with you. I'm going to get to questions now and we will go from there. So thank you for listening to the news roundup. I don't know. I got to go back farther. Where do we want to start? What does Piper think is false? I think what Piper was saying is that there's just like basically both sides are false and potentially equally false. Like, hey, both sides are just giving you not the truth. Billie Eilish. Also love going to Ireland where everyone looks like her. Oh, I didn't know that. So I guess she likes going to Ireland. So is that stolen land? I don't know. Let's see here. I'm having, there's like confusing comments going back and forth in the chat a little bit. Okay. let's keep going here. There's a whole discussion about something very earlier in the podcast. Lankford apologized for rebuking the videotaped Fulton County fraud 2020, now under FBI investigation. Well, that's good. Look, the guy's right. I'm not going to like say he didn't mean it. Like, that's good. I'm glad he apologized. That's great. What about the SBC 26 promo email? I haven't actually seen that. Someone sent that to me, featuring SBC Orlando Pastor David Oot. That's not good. FBC Orlando is kind of known to be this Disneyland of SBC churches, a lot of gimmicks and stuff. Let's see. An outrage that FBC Orlando is not long since kicked out for gay. Oh, right. That's right. You're right about that. I just remembered as you said that. Yes, for gay affirming. Yeah. How are they even still in? I think it's like the same sex attraction stuff. Chris says, is John still making misleading statements like Netanyahu doesn't want American aid? He wants to end. This is intentionally misleading. Netanyahu said in another decade. I just said that on the podcast, Chris. I literally just said that on the podcast. I said it'll probably be like another decade before it phases out. Yeah. How do you deal with these people? I don't know. But it's, and what if, like, that would be funny though, like, because Netanyahu literally says, like, we don't need American aid anymore. And if you just quoted him, it's like, you're leaving out, like, it is, if you don't want America's money going to Israel, okay, which I've said for like ever, since I've said anything about Israel, that's usually like one of the things I always say is like, I don't like aid going to Ukraine, Israel, any of these places. If you're that person, then when Netanyahu says something like that, and it's not just him, it's also members of the Knesset. Does that like do something for you? Like, isn't that what you want? Don't you want things going in that direction? Like, this is the thing that I find confusing is like, I'm getting what I want. It's like, well, it's not on the top. Like, I want it now. Okay, I want it now too. But things are going in the direction I want. That's sort of the point. And yeah, I'm sure with a lot of government things, it's a phasing out type of deal because you have people dependent, unfortunately. And contractors who have contracts for years to come that are that assumed that you're going to have the money to pay for this and that. So it's usually a process. And unfortunately, the progressives are more patient about those things than we are. John, would you rather have President Fuentes or President Neocon? That's not really a fair question because I don't know what President Neocon is. Like, put a face to it, I guess. I think President Fuentes would be really, really, really bad. I think it's a joke act. It's like a meme. It's a joke. It's not even a fair question in a way. Like, if someone who like has no clue what they're doing and is not virtuous, like at all, but also it doesn't have anything to show other than talking, right? Like would even someone like myself, am I going to go to an executive position? Yeah, I've had some experience in like church leadership and I've done some work teams and things like that in like minor roles in the past, but it's like you're looking for someone with more executive experience to be an executive role generally and with a pattern of success in these kinds of things. You want competence. So I don't even like entertaining the idea of talk show hosts making that kind of a jump without something else. But because rhetoric alone should not be the thing. But yeah, someone who's, I mean, this is kind of like a question I don't even know if I want to entertain. Like, it seems silly to talk about. I'm sorry. Not all questions are silly. I think that's kind of a silly question. He would have to be like a different person. So yeah, Chris is really mad at me saying that I didn't say on the Steve Dace show earlier this week, in all caps, this must be a boomer, that I didn't say that it would be 10 years that Netanyahu was going to phase out the aid for Israel. Like, good grief. I said he wanted to phase it out. I don't understand why this is like such a huge deal to people. It's a little crazy to me. Like, some of the Israel obsession is getting a little much, guys. And now I'm dishonest. All right, Chris, you do what you want to do. No, you don't have to download any audio to prove it. Like, I said that. I'm sorry to degrade the program, guys. Like, Conceptual Clarity said, I would call FBC Orlando side A rather than side B. It was really that bad. Okay. Now Sheila's upset because I called someone a boomer. Boomer because you like boomers are known to use all caps. That's why. That's something that it's not like only boomers do it, but it's known. All right. I think that's about it for the podcast. The comment section is becoming a bit slop here. But hey, look, I appreciate everyone who's streaming tonight. I know it's kind of late. Pray for the SBC. this is actually a really important thing, I think. And I know it doesn't get like the shiny headlines anymore like it used to on social media, but the SBC, the PCA, like these are organizations that if they fall, and they like really fall, it's a very bad thing for America. And I don't have any glee in that. I don't want to be right about that. I would love to see virtuous men. I would love to see God raise up people in those capacities. So appreciate the prayers. God bless. We'll have more coming later in the week. Bye now.